Well, welcome listeners to episode 79 of the MailRight Real Estate Agent Podcast Show. And today we have an amazing guest. His name is Mark Walker with Luxmana Investments. And we're going to dive into some tips and tricks and good information about real estate investing. I want to let Mark introduce himself right now. So Mark, take it away.
Hey, thanks so much. I'm really happy to be here. I escaped the rat race in January of 2015. Prior to that, I worked for almost 14 years for a high-tech company while I was part-time investing in real estate. And after leaving the rat race, I ended up buying a 64-unit apartment complex. So now going forward, my biggest focus has been multifamily and really just growing my business in that area of commercial real estate.
Awesome, Mark. Thanks for being here today. We'll get into your story and some of the information you're going to provide in just a minute. I want to turn things over to my illustrious co-host, Mr. Jonathan Denwood. Jonathan, will you introduce yourself?
I love that, illustrious. You keep saying that, Thomas. You just keep saying that. Hi, folks. I'm the founder of MailRight. We're a online internet service that helps you market yourself to your biggest resource. They're the people that actually can recognize you in your local community. And we specialize in offering a number of services around Facebook.
All right. And I'm Thomas J. Nelson. I put people in the largest amount of debt of their lives, but they thank me for it because I'm their residential realtor here in San Diego. And I too was an investor turned realtor, did some investing in the Bay Area before I got into residential real estate. And you can find me on thomasjnelsonrealtor.com plus all social media. All right. Well, let's get into our interview with Mark. Mark, I wanted to first point out that you invest not only in your home state of Colorado, correct, but in three other states. So my first question is, how did you get into out-of-state investing and past the normal fears that people have about out-of-area investing?
Yeah, great question. You know, I think what led me to invest in out-of-state, the motivation was that Colorado has turned into a seller's market. And, you know, we've probably heard about it in the national news. You know, we're getting compared here in Colorado to coastal towns, you know, like San Diego, San Francisco. Right. The prices here have just gone crazy, and that's very much supply-driven. That phenomena really started in late 2014. And it's been crazy ever since. And so I had to turn out of state because I was able to find better deals out there. I also ended up investing in one state because I bought some tax liens there a few years ago. So that one was kind of by accident. But really what led me out of state where I'm most active, that's Texas, is that phenomena here in Colorado, you know, and just, you know, needing to go out and find good deals. But you know, I'll say that, you know, as I approached going out of state, you know, I really leaned very heavily on systems. You know, I have always been a systems guy. I believe that, you know, before you go making any investments, you have to start networking and finding the right people and systems. So specifically a good property management company. Yep. A good property management company is also plugged in extremely well throughout their, you know, their locale as well. So you're able to lean on them as well to find lenders and insurance providers and, you know, brokers, you know, things like that as well.
Awesome. You know, before we get into too much detail, I wanted to kind of go into some basics of investing because I don't know about you out there, but I run into investors all the time here and they're fresh out of a weekend seminar and now all of a sudden they're an investor.
Right.
So there's some things that we consider before we buy a property, things like capitalization, cap rate analysis, cash on cash. Could you go into each of those terms and just kind of what's involved in assessing a property?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I agree with you, you know, knowing your acquisition criteria and sticking to your acquisition criteria is extremely important to an investor. It separates successful investors from unsuccessful ones for sure. You know, things that I look for when in the residential space, when I was buying a bunch of residential stuff, the only one I cared about was cash on cash return.
Right.
You know, some people look at cap rate with residential stuff, but I didn't care so much about that, mainly because of how those types of properties are valued.
Right.
So I looked at cash on cash return. Now, the best way I can explain cash on cash return is imagine if you put a, you know, put $100,000 in the bank, right, in a savings account. By today's rates, you'd be lucky to get 0.5%, you know, on that. So that basically means on a $100,000 deposit, you're going to get about $500 a year in interest, you know, off of that deposit. Cash on cash return is the same concept. How much of my cash outlay am I going to recover in the first year? And so my very first real estate deal was back in 2004. I bought a duplex in South Denver. That property had a 36.5% cash on cash return in the first year.
Wow.
So imagine if I had invested $100,000, just to keep the numbers simple.
Right.
I would have gotten $36,500 back in the first year. Definitely beats the bank, doesn't it?
That does.
Yeah. Now that I'm in the multifamily space, I do care about cap rate. So I do look at cash on cash return. I usually like to see a cash on cash return in the double digits, you know, at least 10% or greater in the first year.
Right.
And then, you know, cap rates, I usually use that to determine, you know, my going in cap rate. So what is it based on the actual financials when I buy the property? And most importantly, I use that same cap rate assumption to, you know, determine, you know, what could my property be worth, you know, if I'm successful in, you know, raising the net operating income of the property.
Okay. And then, you know, you mentioned you're doing multifamily now. So are you looking for underperforming properties or what are you targeting when you're doing multifamily?
Yeah. You know, I'll preface this by saying there are so many different ways to make money in real estate in general, right? Yeah. I love multifamily. Even in the multifamily space, there's lots of different strategies. What I like to do though is, yes, I like to go in and find properties that are distressed. Either they have a whole bunch of deferred maintenance,
right,
or maybe they've been operated, poorly is a harsh word, but maybe less than their potential. They have below market rates. Maybe they're not billing back for utilities yet, right, you know, things like that. So I can go in and I can unlock value in a number of ways by addressing the deferred maintenance, by renovating the units, by, you know, improving the operations, you know, of the property, like billing back for utilities, maybe implementing water conservation, you know, as well, you know, things like that.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's important. You know, I can remember fixing up one of my rehabs that we turned into a buy and hold. I can remember the neighbors going, why are you putting so much money into this house? You know, it was in a, you know, kind of a rougher neighborhood, but up and coming. We saw the trend coming because of supply and demand. Mm-hmm. And year after year, whenever we had to re-rent that property, the neighbors would say, you're asking way too much for that. And I go, I'm getting it. But I'm getting it because they're walking into a new kitchen and new systems and, you know, new bathroom, not the status quo of the neighborhood, which is where you have a lot of slumlords, essentially, you know, trying to put as little into the property as they can. So, I mean, it sounds like we think alike in that realm, but specifically, what is your philosophy and what do you actually do when you go in and rehab a property?
Well, you know, every property is different, but in general, usually where we're going to see the best rent pops is by renovating the units, oftentimes replacing appliances.
Right.
In fact, the 64 unit property that I bought most recently, every single appliance on the property was at least 20 years old.
Wow.
And, you know, I knew from doing comps, you know, rent comps from, you know, other properties in the area, that simply upgrading the appliances, if I did nothing else, that was worth an extra $50 per month in rent.
Yeah.
Of course, that wasn't all that I did. I went in and, you know, replaced all of the plumbing fixtures, replaced the lighting fixtures and things like that. You know, did a nice flooring and, you know, paint combination, things like that. Just really gave the units an overall facelift. Spent about $3,500 per unit, to renovate them, to give them a little bit of a facelift. And that seems rather low, but, you know, on properties like this where, you know, you're going in and doing one bedroom and small two bedroom units, there's just not a whole lot you have to do, you know? And I was able to raise rents you know, anywhere from $125 on the low end to, you know, up to about, you know, $200 per unit after doing that finish to that property. And, you know, that's a pretty good return, especially on the appliances. Yeah. So,
well, yeah. Let me ask you this, because you just mentioned something that's when I find a property that's underperforming, one of the number one things is they haven't raised the rent in eons. And right. There's a fear of doing that on a regular basis. Can you speak on that a little? Because, I mean, you're going into properties with potentially a lot of existing tenants. And I think the average person would be afraid to lose those tenants. But talk about the tenants that come in and replace them when you do an upgrade on a property like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know what? I think we've all heard, you know, investors or wannabe investors say that they love properties that the tenants have been there for like 10 years. They've had long-term tenants. In fact, I've even seen that in the marketing of some properties. Whenever I see that, all I see is dollar signs, you know, because I know that there's going to be upside in that property because they haven't raised the rents, you know, and the truth is that any savvy investor is going to be targeting a property in an area that has housing shortages. So if you're doing that, then there's nothing to be afraid of in terms of tenant turnover, because either your existing tenant is going to realize that they can't find a cheaper place, or, you know, you're just going to have 10 more people at the door, you know, wanting to get in as soon as they leave. You know, it's just something that, you know, if you've done your homework, if you know what other properties around you are charging for rent and what amenities they're providing, you can very easily comp it out, you know, and know how much rent you should be or could be getting, you know. So
that's a very good point. You know, I can remember when I was going in and rehabbing properties and raising rents and tenants saying, well, I'm going to move out. And it's that research that I knew that either they weren't, or if they did, just like you said, there's 10 better qualified people ready to rent that place. And sure enough, they would go do their due diligence when they were threatening to leave, and they'd call me back and say, you know what, we've decided to stay.
Yeah. And you know what, kind of along those lines too, one thing that my management company in Texas did that was a great idea. I wish I could take credit for the idea, but it wasn't mine. It's something that they just do. They would, you know, invite all of the people that were up for renewal in the next month or two.
Okay.
On like a Saturday afternoon, or for like lunchtime or something like that, to a renewal party. And they would bring them to the office, and they would show them a sample of the carpet that they would get, and, you know, or the backsplash. You know, we did some backsplashes in the kitchen and stuff like that. They actually show them the tile, you know, and stuff like that they'd get. They'd show them what the appliances looked like that they'd be getting. And they would also, and this is where I thought it was really creative, they already had shopped the comps. And they literally would hand them a piece of paper that would say, here's what the property down the road is charging, and here's the finish you're going to get there. And then they'd also even factor in the price of a moving truck. And by the way, you're going to have to pay this much money for a moving truck.
Right.
You know, and they would literally say, it just really makes sense for you to stay at the new market rate.
Yeah. That's,
you know, great. And again, if a tenant's willing to pay the new market rate, of course, by all means, they should stay.
Right.
You know, but you know, if they're not, you know, then I really do believe that you're better off just opening up the door to someone else and getting the higher rent that you know your property's worth.
Can I ask a question, Mark? You know, you talk about these properties, but have you got any tips or insights about avoiding, like in Britain, there was a period where people invested in property and they had investors in it. You know, and they had to pay, you know, enormous amounts of money to have that asbestos removed from the ceilings, or there's some structural, because you're talking about appliances, decorative improvement. But if you buy a property that's got substantial problems, you could be really financially really hit very badly. So how do you avoid getting a property that isn't, you're not talking about cosmetic improvements?
Yeah, you know, well, definitely you want to do your due diligence when you look to acquire the property. you know, do all of your on-site inspections, your physical inspections and things like that. Obviously, you know, when it comes to, you know, things like asbestos and, you know, things like that, you want to, your most ideal situation is going to be to, you know, only make, don't make any structural changes. In other words, don't plan on tearing down walls or anything like that. Right. Because, you know, if there is asbestos or something like that present, you know, that's where it can get really expensive. If you disturb it, you know, then you obviously have to, you know, take the appropriate steps. And the other thing is too, that, you know, when doing your on-site inspection and doing your CapEx budget for the first year, you know, you really want to budget, for the unknown, for any possible unknowns as well. I usually set aside 15 to 20% of my CapEx budget in the first year, just for things that I may not know about. You know, great example with my 64 unit, my pool, you know, the pool on the property was in fine condition. You know, it you know, the inspection came back good on it, but the city came in after the fact, and they decided that they wanted me to, you know, replaster the pool. Well, that should have cost $6,000 or $7,000. Once you start peeling one thing back, you find another that turned into about a $15,000 event. Mm. Unfortunate, but you know what? I was prepared for it. I had money set aside for, you know, other deferred maintenance or other unknowns, you know, that I didn't, you know, anticipate in that first year.
That's a great point you just made, Mark. And that's something that I noticed, like when I get investors coming to me to want to buy and hold or fix and flip properties, they don't have, and mostly for the buy and hold, they don't have that budget set aside, not only for the unknowns, but for the ongoing. Part of the cap rate analysis I'll do for them includes a monthly maintenance percentage. And they always ask, well, what's that for? And, you know, and I talk about, you know, having it socked away. It's not that you're going to use it every month, but when that new roof needs to come in December, when you're not expecting it right before Christmas, it's nice to have that money set aside, isn't it?
It sure is. And this is one of the things that I love about multifamily as well, is that the lenders are, you know, pretty sophisticated. They actually even require you to, you know, have reserve for them to escrow reserves for you.
Okay.
They do a property condition assessment of their own, you know, as part of their underwriting process. And they literally come in and they, you know, determine how much useful life is left on some of the things like the roof, you know, and the HVAC systems and things like that. And they actually have a company come in and do an analysis to say, okay, 5 years from now, you're going to need to replace the, you know, half of the HVACs. And then 10 years, you're going to need to replace the roof. And they actually build a CapEx schedule around that. And then that's how they determine how much you need to be reserving.
Wow, that's a fantastic service. I've only dealt in four units or less, so I've never gotten to that level of investing. But that's great to know. That's a good practice for everyone to employ in their investing practices.
It's just a good discipline, you know. And I completely agree with you. You know, that's this where a lot of investors go wrong is they go in undercapitalized.
Yep.
You know, and I see it all the time. It sounds like you do as well. You know, the best thing you can do is, you know, just make sure you have enough capital, you know, to do what that property needs. Don't get to a position where you're trying to convince yourself that a deal looks good, you know?
Right.
So
it's getting back to your advice earlier, sticking to your plan.
Yes.
That's the whole point of the plan. If it doesn't meet the numbers, you got to walk away. You can't square peg a round hole on these things.
Completely agree. Yeah.
Jonathan, Mark's speaking my language, so I don't want to dominate the conversation here. Do you want to jump in with any questions?
Well, yeah, you know, you say the right deals, but I've been in periods where I've had friends looking and there are no good deals. But I suppose you covered that in your experience in Denver, because you're saying at the present moment, there might be one that comes up, but in general, there are no real logical good deals in Denver, and that's why you've moved to other markets. So I suppose you've really covered that, Mark, really, haven't you?
Yeah. You know, at the same time though, you know, if I wanted to add, you know, any, you know, I've fiddled with the idea of maybe expanding into one more market, you know, I haven't done it yet. As long as I can find, you know, deals down in Texas, you know, I might as well keep doing those. But if I was to go beyond maybe one more market, I'd have to clone myself. So, you know, and fortunately too, I'm just not, I don't feel like I'm desperate for a deal. You know, as we were talking about, you know, I know my acquisition criteria. I'm going to stick to it. Typically too, I'm more of a conservative investor. You know, I'm not just looking for a deal. I'm looking for the deal. Right. You know, and so, you know, again, it's a discipline, just like setting money aside, making sure you're well capitalized. It's a discipline too, and sticking to your acquisition criteria, you know, not being desperate for a deal, and, you know, just, you know, and, you know, if you know how to look for them, you know, there's deals out there to be found, you know, you just have to be patient and know how to look for them.
So, we got about 5 minutes before we go for our break, folks, but so you said, you know, finding these deals, there's ways. So I presume that you rely on a network of professionals, real estate agents, other people that know you and feed you possible deals. Is that correct? And how did you develop this network, Mark?
Yeah, you know, in Denver, it was very much the case. And it's funny too, you know, this just goes to show, you know, the power of networking. You know, many years ago, back in 2010, I did a couple of small development deals with a builder. We scraped some single family homes in Denver and raised up, you know, a couple three-story duplexes in their place. Oh, he actually introduced me to my lender, who I ended up doing a bunch of business with. My lender ended up introducing me to what I call a power broker, you know, someone that just knew how to speak the language, was an investor himself. And I think that's incredibly important. That's something I really, you know, give a lot of credit to. People that are brokers or in the business that are also investors themselves that have walked in your shoes as an investor, that's huge. You know, my lender also introduced me to a property manager, which has obviously led to a very fruitful relationship. So, you know, that's how I went about, you know, it was just through networking and doing business with people and, you know, developing trust for each other that, you know, I ended up, you know, meeting and doing business with some really amazing people. But, you know, I met a power broker early on that was able to find me a number of deals that matched my acquisition criteria. And, you know, now today too, in the commercial space and multifamily, yes, I do, you know, make sure to reach out to brokers and make sure they understand what my acquisition criteria is, but I actually pick up the phone and I call other owners as well. You know, and if nothing else, just to develop a relationship and to bounce ideas off of and stuff like that. And, you know, they're, you know, at the same time too, if they're ever in a position where they're ready to sell, maybe move up to a larger asset or do something different, then they think of me. They know that I'm in acquisition mode. And, you know, perhaps we look at doing a deal principal to principal.
That's great. I think we'll go for our first break, folks. And when we come back, my co-host Thomas will grill Mark a little bit more. So we're going for a break, folks. We'll be back in a minute.
Are you struggling to master Facebook ads? Struggle no more. Check out Modern Mogul Marketing and put your real estate business on autopilot with Grant Wise. To receive a 20-minute business consultation, go to modernmogulmarketing.com and schedule a time. It's that easy. Grant Wise is a proud sponsor of the Real Estate Agent Podcast.
We're coming back, folks. We're talking to Mark, a highly successful investor in real estate. I think it's a fascinating conversation. Got another question, Thomas?
Sure. Well, I'll start the question with a comment. You know, I got into investing through my family. That's how my exposure to real estate really came about, was being a property manager and then getting into my own investments at the encouragement of my grandparents and my parents. And so, you know, I agree with what you were saying, Mark, that it's not every realtor that can work with an investor, because if you haven't gone through a house and done a rehab or gone through the challenges that sometimes your eagerness and mistakes teach you, and things like that. You know, you've gotten dirty in a house, and you've had to postpone remodeling your kitchen in your home so you can remodel the kitchen in your buy and hold, so that you can get a better tenant in there, and then have your wife be patient with that and things like that. You know, you understand what these guys are going through. It's not about commissions. It's about the math and making it work for both of you. And so the question I'm getting at is, can you talk about the relationships you've established with these, with this power broker or with other agents that bring you deals? How do you structure the deal between the two of you?
You know, there's a million and one different ways to structure something like that. In the case of the power broker, where he was finding me a bunch of residential stuff, it was just a standard brokerage agreement,
okay,
you know, that we had. But, you know, there's lots of different ways too. I know he had other clients that, you know, actually he partnered with on deals. You know, he had equity stakes in the properties that he found for other people that were able to bring the money, you know. And so, you know, that's another way to do it. And, you know, especially in a market like today, I would say that, you know, if you want to, you know, give yourself a leg up and get yourself more of a broker's time and attention, you might look at, you know, forming those types of partnerships, you know, because, you know, that broker obviously dedicates their time to finding deals. And if you want them to think of you when they find one or even a really good one, then there might be another way to incent them other than just, you know, their standard commission. Maybe you can give them a slice of the equity, you know, or partner, you know, in some other way, or guarantee them the sale, you know, when you decide to exit that property, you know, give them the sale, you know, when you decide to sell that as well. So.
Yep. And those are all great points, because that's exactly the different kinds of incentives that the investors that come to me today and view me as a residential realtor, you know, and the ones that grab my attention that get me to call them when I've got a property that may be less than desirable for the general public, but it's, you know, it's low hanging fruit for an investor. It's the ones that stay in touch with me on a regular basis, that they're not just there when I have a listing. And, you know, because you get 50 real investors out of the woodwork when you have a rehab property on the market. But it's those in between times, who's staying in touch, who's keeping me top of mind, and who stays top of mind for me. So, you know, I think what you're touching on is the relationships you build. And it sounds like you've got this main one, but obviously he's a broker in one particular area. How have you reached out into the other states you're in, not only with your brokers, but with the property management companies you work with?
Yeah, that's a great question. And before I answer, I want to tack on to something you said, because I think, you know, the importance of keeping in touch. I really agree with that, because, you know, I even remember when I first made contact with the power broker in Denver, we decided to meet for lunch. And the first thing he asked me is, why do you want to start investing in real estate or rental properties? You know, I mean, he started, it's like he was grilling me, because he was like trying to figure out if I was for real.
Right.
And I think the thing that that made him realize I was real is I said, I don't want to just buy one. I want to buy 10 in the first year. And he realized, you know, and I said, because if something goes wrong with one property, then my entire portfolio is doing horribly.
Right.
Whereas, you know, if you have 10, you can, you know, you're more diversified. And so, you know, I think too that, and, you know, networking and keeping in touch and staying top of mind for him was huge. But as I expanded into Texas, the advantage that I had is I have a cousin that's a 30-year veteran in multifamily. And he's very well established in Texas.
Okay.
But you know what? It works just the same.
Right.
It works just the same. You know, you've got to keep in touch. You've got to, you know, constantly be bouncing ideas off of each other, sharing what you're working on. You know, because as you talk about your successes and even your failures, you know, the things you're learning and, you know, the direction you're going, you know, people are just going to think of you, you know, and they're going to know that you're the real thing. You know, and you even talked about people coming fresh out of conferences. You know, you mentioned that early on.
Right.
It's so true. I mean, there are so many people that come out of a conference or a you know, some boot camp or something like that, and they're just guns a-blazing, you know. Yeah. And the, you know, I hate to say this, if there's anyone that's listening that this is you, you know, probably 80-90% of the people coming out of those are never going to do a deal.
Yeah.
Right. You've got to get to your first deal, and you've got to get your first deal done. And the reality is that if you're new, you need other people to help make that happen. People like yourself, Thomas, you know, and others that have been through the process and have the network and the capabilities to do that.
No, it's a good point. Cause I mean, they don't give out awards for doing it on your own.
That's right.
And so you might as well get help. And
that's right.
And you know, you're going to have to pull a few weeds before you find a rose in the garden there when you're looking for the right fit, the right relationship. So, because you know, there are so many people calling themselves investors. And so if you are, okay, let's see your track record. Show me some of the properties you've worked on, or show me some of the properties you manage. You know, ask questions, do some due diligence. I hate to sound pessimistic, but because of the world we are in now versus, you know, almost 30 years ago when I got started, you really can't take people just at face value. You have to do some due diligence on what they've been up to.
Mark, you know, let's say you're looking at the multifamily market, you are an investor, but this is your first go. This is a very broad question. You might not be, because it depends on what area. But let's take Texas. Let's say you're looking to buy your first multifamily property in Texas, where you have some experience. What kind of price and what kind of financial resources would you recommend people need to enter that market?
Sure. Well, the first thing I'm going to say is, you know, start building a network, you know, in Texas, if that's your desire, right? Because, and depending on what locale you want to be in, if you want to be in Dallas, you know, versus maybe one of the secondary markets or something like that, a property manager is going to be able to give you a very, very clear idea as to, you know, what your, you know, prices, what prices you need to target, what types of amenities are going to result in the highest rent, you know, who the best brokers are in the area, the best lenders, things like that. Now in Dallas, Dallas is at a point where I target C-class deals and B-class areas. That's typically going to be around $60,000 to $70,000 per unit in multifamily. And, you know, it's funny because, you know, just a few years ago, you could find deals for $30,000, $40,000 a unit, you know, in Texas. You know, those same deals are now, you know, $60,000 to $70,000 per unit. That type of property is going to be a C-class deal in a B-class area that's had some renovation done to it. Probably half of the units have been renovated, which means that there's still some meat on the bone for you. If you want to come in as a value-add investor and renovate the other half of the units, maybe add some additional amenities, maybe add a barbecue area or a playground for the kids or a dog park, you know, something like that, you know, those types of opportunities are still going to exist for you with that type of deal. Things that will allow you to raise rents and the income even more.
Mark, have you ever added solar to any of your properties?
I have not. Although on my 64 unit, I did talk with a guy that specialized in solar. We never moved forward on it. But the way I understood it is there were all sorts of, you know, rebates and incentives at the, you know, I think it was at the county level or maybe at the state level that right. You can get for doing that type of thing. I think it's a lot more common on maybe B-plus and A-class properties, you know. And at the same time, too, you're really looking at the common areas,
right?
You know, when you're already submetered, you know. But you know, I never moved forward on that. I think that's a great concept because when it comes to multifamily, your objectives are really clear. You want to increase income and decrease expenses, and that's simply because the value of your property is affected by your net operating income. If you increase your net operating income, you're going to force the appreciation of your property. That's something different than with residential, right?
That's a great point.
Yeah, and so I love doing things like that, like solar. You know what I did do though, Thomas, was I implemented a water conservation plan.
That's interesting. And
I bet this is something that's really important in California as well, because water is so scarce. Right?
Absolutely.
We're coming up on 1 year now since doing the water conservation, and we've saved over 2 million gallons of water.
Wow.
At the same time, we didn't just do what was right for the environment, but we also were able to reduce the amount of water, the bill that we were forwarding on to our residents. So our residents have a lower water bill. But at the same time, I'm able to bill back a larger percentage of my water. So it was really a win for the environment, a win for my residents, and a win for me.
Yeah, that's an awesome.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to ask you, and I'm kind of taking you off topic here, but I noticed I did some due diligence on your portfolios, and you invested in condos at one point. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people here that hesitate to do that because of the HOA fees and things like that. Could you speak on your condo investing?
I love condos. I love townhomes.
Tell me why.
The reason why is because I get, if everything else is the same, right, between a condo and like a single family home, I get a better return post tax on condos than anything else.
How's that work?
Well, we all know about depreciation, right? Depreciation
right.
expense, and you know, phantom expense, as it's sometimes referred to.
Right.
With a single family home, you know, there's a general rule of thumb, you know, that you can only depreciate the value of the structure. You can't depreciate the land.
Right.
When you buy a single family home, a certain percentage, let's just call it like a 75-25. Is that pretty common in California as well?
Yeah, roughly. Yeah.
Okay. So if you buy a property for $100,000, you can depreciate, as a general rule of thumb, $75,000 of that acquisition over 27 and a half years.
Right.
Right. Well, with a condo or a townhome, there's a much smaller amount of land associated with your acquisition price.
Mm-hmm.
So you can, as a general rule of thumb, you can depreciate a larger percentage of your acquisition price. Now, by the way, I am not a CPA.
Right.
I am in no position to advise anyone on this. Okay. But I'm telling you what my experience has been. So because I can depreciate a larger percentage of my acquisition price, I get a better return post-tax than I would on a single family home. Now, I'll say that the fear of HOAs is real, okay? HOAs, there's good ones and there's bad ones out there. And when you're doing your due diligence, you have to look at the HOAs, you have to look at their bylaws, you have to look at their rules and regulations, you have to look at how much reserves they have. That's huge.
Yep.
If you run into an HOA that doesn't have any reserves, I would be afraid, be very, very afraid, because that means a special assessment's on its way. They're maybe not, you know, getting enough to cover the annual expenses, and you're probably going to see higher HOA fees in the near future.
Yep.
But the truth is that if you have a good HOA, someone that has a good amount of reserves in place, and you know, the community is clean, and things like that, they don't have a huge loss run on their insurance policy. That's another thing I'd look at, you know.
That's a good point. Yep.
You know, then you actually have a partner in your property, you know,
right.
A silent partner.
Right.
You know, someone that
hopefully
doesn't. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, but, you know, and the truth is, too, that because the HOA handles, you know, typically handles everything outside.
Right.
You know, the common area, including the roofs. And painting the exterior and stuff like that, you're only responsible for what's inside your four walls. So there's really just not a whole lot that can go wrong with your property. You know, I mean, as long as you maintain the inside, your inside walls, you know, there's just not a whole lot that can go wrong with it.
Yep, I agree.
Well, it's in a way, you state, not to be disparaging because you're a very sophisticated investor, but you just state the 101 of investing, because fundamentally, what you just said is, because a lot of people got this not totally based on facts opinion about that particular sector. That's why you're investing in it, because you could get, because you got less competition. Because there's less competition, you can get a better return. But you got to do your due diligence. You got to understand what you're getting involved with. That's what you just really said, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I'd say, I said this earlier, right? There's so many different ways to make money in real estate. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's commercial retail, there's commercial warehouses, there's office complexes, there's residential, there's multifamily, there's land, you know, and stuff like that. There's water rights, you know, and mineral rights and things like that.
Storage units.
yeah, exactly. You know, there's so many different ways to make money. You know,
it's funny that you said about water rights. There's a little sign in Nevada, and it goes like this, Mark. Beer's for drinking, water's for fighting.
And that is true.
That is really very true. Rob, Mark, we're coming to the end of the interview. Obviously, you know, you came on and it's been a fascinating discussion, and I think we'll have you back at some time to continue if you're up for it.
Sure.
But obviously you came on the podcast. What can we do for you, and what can our listeners do for you? Is there anything that we can help you with?
Well, hey, I'll tell you what. Please, by all means, visit my website, luxmana.com. I have a blog out there, you know, that people can read if you're interested in following me, or, you know, maybe I share some things that I've learned along my journey. But I'll tell you what, as a way of saying thank you to everyone for, you know, listening to the interview, I would like to make a free gift available. If you go to luxmana.com/mailwrite, so that's luxmana.com/mail-write. I have out there a paper that I wrote called 10 Not So Obvious Ways to Boost Your Multifamily Property NOI. Now, if you're a real estate broker that's maybe interested in doing a larger multifamily deal, you're going to need to learn how to speak the language. If you're an investor that's looking to invest in multifamily, you know, you might find this useful. And if you're already an existing multifamily investor, hey, maybe there's something that I learned along the way that I share in this paper that you might be able to benefit from. But, you know, definitely please, by all means, go out and check that out. And thanks again for the opportunity, guys.
Oh, it's been fascinating, Mark. And we will have that link in the show notes, and we'll be getting those up. Probably in one tomorrow or the next day, folks. And we normally have the podcast up on Wednesdays or Thursdays. So in the next couple of days, you'll be listening to this, folks, and the show notes should be up. Mark, it's been a fascinating discussion. Thomas, how can people get hold of you as well?
Sure. Well, first, I want to thank Mark also. I really enjoyed our conversation. I could have gone another hour. You know, you are speaking my language. my name is Thomas J. Nelson. I'm a realtor here residentially in San Diego. You can reach me at thomasjnelsonrealtor.com. You can find me on Facebook, LinkedIn, or Twitter. And Jonathan, how about you? How do people reach you?
It's quite easy, folks. Basically, email me at Jonathan, J-O-N-A-T-H-A-N, at mail-write.com, or go to the Mail Write Twitter feed. I'm normally on there, check it once a day, and I'll comment on other people's, give us feedback about the show. That would be really appreciated. Yeah. I think it's been a fascinating discussion. Please go to Mark's website. It's got plenty of resources, and like I say, we'll have that link in the notes that go with the show, which is on the MailWrite website. And we'll be back next week, we're hopefully with another guest that will inform you and give you information that will make you a much better real estate agent in 2017. We'll see you next week. Bye, folks.
Thanks for listening, guys.